die now.
For a terrifying new tale of fear, lust, and insanity.
Not quite as live as usual on the Tuesday night Blitzrick. It's the Asylum Fantasy Football Show.
Yeah, welcome into the Asylum. We're Fleeger and Briggs. Drop us a line at asylumfootball@gmail.com.
A Twitter feed of note at Asylum Football.
And don't forget, WSRU 88.1 FM, the voice of the rock.
Boy, Rick, it feels like it's been months since we've been together here in the studio putting together this show.
Oh, yes, indeed. But, you know, without further ado.
You believe it's July already.
Yeah, I tell you, it's July. Right.
I think the cat's out of the bag. If you didn't listen to last week, and I'm assuming you didn't because you'd never listen 2 weeks in a row, this is pre-recorded. I am on a fabulous beach vacation right now, soaking up the sun. Rick's in the beach chair beside me, so we pre-recorded this show.
Yeah, we're really beaching together here. Yeah, as a matter of fact, they're doing a lot of beaching in Alaska. They're having a brutal rare heat wave up there.
Really? What is it, like 45 degrees? What's a heat wave in Alaska?
I don't really know. But
all right, Rick. Well, enough shtick. We have a fantasy dignitary on the air. Rick, I'll let you handle the introductions.
Oh, it's been a long time coming. I think it was last June, I believe, when he was on vacation when we had him in last.
Is it a coincidence last time we had him on the air there was a horrific thunderstorm that knocked the board out, and today, Rick, we are currently going through a horrific thunderstorm.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be coincidence, but we have Dennis Farrell from the Fantasy Sideline Show. You know him on Twitter at DennisFarrell77. Dennis, welcome into the asylum.
What up, beaches?
Rick had no idea what that meant. Great to talk to you, Dennis. What else you got going on out there in Detroit way, I believe? That's where you're from, right, Detroit?
Yes, it's a lot of rain. Great Detroit weather, I would say. Excited for the Lions, all four fans ready to cheer them on. So, and fantasy football.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dennis, so I got to be honest with you. Rick wanted to have you on the show. He is prepared to take you to task for something that you said. He's been awful things that we can't say on the air. WSRU won't allow us to do it. So, Rick, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to turn my microphone off. Let him have it.
That is not true. It's nothing but healthy, spirited fantasy debate. That's all it is. And why don't you let everybody know what's going on with you, Dennis? Been a lot of things happening in your fantasy career from what we hear.
Well, you know, I am still with ESPN Radio Detroit 1090, not currently doing on-air stuff. I have to throw that out there. Some legal stuff going on with the station, not me. I'm not fired. But I am now one of the Roto experts, the XM Series Ally guys, those guys. Yeah, I'm part of them. Just catching me everywhere. I've got so many fingers and so many pots, I can't grasp anything.
Well, that's good. It's good to be busy this time of year, that's for sure. And, I just listened to you.
Here it comes.
Yeah, we go.
Put your helmet on, Dennis.
This is nothing. I listened to your show last night, the Fantasy Sideline Show. Listened to it. Great show, great guest, and you were talking about some draft strategies. And it just brought to mind, I said, boy, this would be a nice discussion. And
not what he said before we cracked the mic.
What an idiot. I'm sure that came out of his mouth somewhere.
No, never in a million years. But you did come up with an interesting strategy. Why don't you say it yet again on air of your draft strategy this year?
I will set it up for you because I know you are just chomping at the bit to just try to bury me here. But my strategy this year is go wide receiver early. I think the drop-off between first-tier and second-tier wide receiver is big. Not as big as the drop-off from, and let's take out the elite top four running backs here, but the drop from, you know, the fifth running back to the 15th running back, I think you go wide receiver early and often, you know, first two or three picks wide receiver, and stock up on mid-tier running backs, just, you know, from round three, four, five on, you know, go crazy with running backs. If you feel froggy, throw in a quarterback. There's maybe one quarterback I might take before the fourth round. Other than that, I'll wait for Tony Romo in the sixth round and be happy with that. But look, there are so many running backs. I think the market is flooded with fantasy running backs that can put up points. And let's be honest, by week four, everybody's looking for the matchup play anyways. So draft a ton of running backs in mid-tier, play the matchups week in, week out, and feast off either PPR or standard league wide receiver points week in and week out.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, I'll agree with you. I mean, it's an enticing strategy. I mean, you because people are thinking, okay, yeah, I'll get Calvin, Brandon Marshall, Dez Bryant, that kind of thing. I did a little research. Of course, we'll throw Calvin out. And let's throw Adrian Peterson out for that matter, as far as running back. Now, you know, old school. You know, one of the first commandments is draft running backs early and often. That's the first commandment in the Ten Commandments of fantasy drafting, according to us. But we'll throw Calvin Johnson out of there. We'll throw AP. Brandon Marshall had a fantastic year, but the difference between Calvin Johnson and Dez Bryant, who was third in the scoring system I use, it was PPR, was 62 points. I mean, convince me here, the 24th running back, if you're picking running backs, the 24th scoring running back last year was Danny Woodhead at 156 points. The 24th scoring wide receiver is T.Y. Hilton at 202. I see a lot more depth at wide receiver.
Here's a problem with running backs, though, and this is the biggest problem. You look at the last 5 years preseason rankings in fantasy football, the top 15, easily 7 to 8 of those guys are out because of injuries, are gone because of bad performances, you know, bad offensive linemen changes in the offense. But people don't adapt to that. People still go after these guys year in, year out. Gosh, give me a second here to throw out a name that everybody went after early in the last couple of years, or a running back, maybe like an Alfred Morris, who had a stunning year last year. People will overdraft him early and then get stuck holding the bag of a running back that you probably shouldn't have drafted that early. Year in, year out, that happens. Then you're rushing to the waiver wires to pick up some of these guys that you maybe could have drafted and have been okay. I'm looking at avoiding the headache of this running back carousel, and year in, year out, there is a running back carousel. I mean, you have to admit it yourself.
Yeah, I will go there. I mean, there's no doubt. That's a great point with Alfred Morris. We've talked about him. Neither one of us are all that high on him. Number one, Shanahan, you don't know if he fumbles twice, he may be on the bench as far as that goes. I'm not, but it's the guys like, of course, you know, I know Doug Martin, going into his second year, he was very inconsistent last year. What was it, like 80-some fantasy points in a couple of games or whatever it was. But there's, you know, Jamal Charles, Ray Rice, Marshawn Lynch. Some of these guys, these are the top-notch guys, obviously. But LeSean McCoy, Trent Richardson. I don't know. I just, it's to me, they peter out a lot quicker, the quality backs, than the running backs do. I mean, excuse me, the wide receivers do. And if I've got, say I've gotten lucky and was, say, the, I don't know, top five picked, and I picked Ray Rice, and I picked up, coming back, I got a Chris Johnson or Matt Forte, I think there's some wide receiver quality out there a lot more in the third and fourth rounds than I would feel comfortable with his running backs in the fourth round. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right to a point, but you get what you pay for. And in running backs, I think there are so many gems later in the draft. Reggie Bush. I don't believe for a second he's going to rush for 1,000 yards. If you're in a PPR league and you can get him in the fourth or fifth round, that's great. Steven Jackson. I think Steven Jackson's going to finish the year as a top five fantasy running back. I believe him that much. Where is he going in ADP right now? He's going in about the third round. You know, do you believe in redemption with Ryan Matthews? You can throw, later in the draft. Right? You can't tell me someone's going to draft Ryan Matthews before the fourth round. I can name a ton more running backs. I mean, Lamar Miller. You know, Devontae Leach is looking to sign with Miami now. If that happens, Lamar Miller has to, in my mind, shoot up the rankings. Now, it may not show on everybody's rankings, but if you keep an eye out on this stuff, I think you can find gems later in the draft and stock up on some of these wide receivers that you might need to win.
Yeah, I like it. It's a risk. Here's my first question I'm going to have to ask when I look at it. If you don't get Calvin Johnson in that first round, say he goes fifth, sixth, what you see him go, I'm showing his ADP at 505 right now. If you don't get him, are you willing, say you're sitting at that 9-10 spot, are you willing to go A.J. Green, come back around, pick up that other guy? My biggest concern is I look at ADP, 10 of the first 13 guys going to running backs. And a lot of the drafts we've been doing, and probably a lot of the ones you're doing too, you're seeing sometimes 14, outside of Calvin Johnson, if you could throw him out, 14, 15, 16 running backs in a row. I guess, is it a matter of, by taking running backs earlier, are you getting caught up in the run? And if you don't get Calvin Johnson, I think that strategy works if you get Calvin Johnson in the first round. Are you reaching for the second round guy you're going to pick if you wind up taking A.J. Green or somebody else in that first round?
You know what? I always have a roaming strategy. I never go in with a concrete strategy. You know, keep that in mind that if I go in and land Calvin Johnson, my plan is then to land, you know, number two and number three in wide receivers. A.J. Green, definitely, I think. A.J. probably wouldn't fall to you. I don't think realistically you'll be able to get A.J. and Calvin, but I think you could walk out of that draft happy with, you know, an A.J. Green, I think Roddy White bounces back. There's no, you know, he's been a 100-catch guy for so long. Yes, it depends on who. A.J. Green, I would reach maybe two or three spots to get him. I wouldn't reach any more than that. And if one of these running backs drop, my strategy is okay to change to get a dropping running back. I mean, last season, you know, in a few of the drafts I've done, I saw LeSean McCoy drop to like the ninth pick. How do you not draft him at 9 overall? I know he had a bad season, but how do you not? And I abandoned any kind of, you know, strategy I had to pick him up. And you have to be quick on your feet to develop a new strategy after that.
Yeah, that's true. There's no doubt about that. I guess I'm just, I don't know, hard-headed, stubborn. I don't know.
Old.
Well, yeah.
Oh, I thought we were just naming things about you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Here's the thing, though. You know, change is so difficult to grasp. When, you know, we're all so comfortable in that we have to have a running back. And let's be honest, that was before the two running back system. That was before Mikel LeSure at number 30 in some fantasy football rankings. You know, fantasy football running backs are pretty deep now. I mean, I'm pulled out an old draft book here. You know, they have Mikel LeSure at 30. They have Ahmad Bradshaw at 37. Those are two guys I'd be comfortable with owning. You know, Giovanni Bernard at 29. You know, I'm not saying I'm targeting him. I'm not saying I have to have him. But I would be comfortable with having some of these guys on my roster. Jonathan Dwyer, I mean, everybody forgets this. You know, he's a starting running back right now. I know they're rookie happy, but he hasn't lost that job yet. You know, there are so many guys people are forgetting about or assuming will be non-fantasy relevant anymore. You know, Noshon Moreno, you know, everybody assumes Noshon Moreno is not even going to be on this team. It's crazy.
I'm still having a hard time. I'm looking at Danny Woodhead, 156 points last year, the 24th leading scorer in PPR format. I mean, to get to 156 points at wide receiver, I'm down at number 44 with Jeremy Curley. And, I mean, there's more depth at wide receiver. And, like, I understand what you're saying, that you can get a lot of these guys to supplement in, but I think that it holds true both ways. I mean, if I've got Jamal Charles and Chris Johnson, I bet you I can build a pretty good wide receiver core.
Well, here's, I guess, let me go about it this way. I think there's a better chance that you could walk out of a draft with A.J. Green, Demaryius Thomas, and maybe Julio Jones. Those are, you know, three top six wide receivers than you could walking out of any fantasy draft with three top 10 running backs.
Oh, no doubt. You're absolutely right there.
And that's kind of where I'm going for is if you can snag three of the top six, three of the top something in that position, minus tight end, of course, then you have to go for that while everybody's snatching up running backs. People are taking running backs because they are so scared. They have to have a stud name. They, you know, these guys are so high on the name. While if you sit back and you plan and you look, you, like I said, you could walk out with Thomas, Jones, in A.J. Green, and I would take those three guys over, you know, the best running back and whatever else you could probably guarantee me in the second and third round as running back.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting, and it sets you up. You're at a plug and play situation with your wide receivers. You don't have to think about them. I think where I get heartburn with it, you talk about working the waiver wire. When I get into midseason and these injuries hit, and they're going to hit all positions. They probably do hit running back a little more seriously, but when we're talking about these upper tier wide receivers, we're going to be getting, you know, Dez Bryant's going to be banged up. A.J. Green hasn't shown a propensity for getting hurt, but some of these upper echelon guys are going to get hurt too. I find it so much easier to go to the wire, find a plug and play guy at wide receiver week to week based on matchup. You can find the third guy in a Peyton Manning and an Aaron Rodgers in one of these offenses. Somebody I can pluck off the wire and plug in. Whereas when you're seeing 15 running backs going in the first two rounds, when you're seeing 35 of them gone by the end of the fifth round, that might be a little bit of a exaggeration. But it's so hard. You're waiting for that one guy to emerge and then trying to play the waiver wire. I think it's safer bet. It's certainly high end, assuming everybody stays healthy and you hit on at least one of those running backs. I like your strategy. But if you have an injury at the running back position specifically, if you're taking that strategy, I think you're going to have a hard time getting it back.
See, I disagree because with my strategy is you did not invest that much in a running back that goes down. You know, you may have invested – if you drafted a running back in the first round and he goes down, you're panicking. If you draft a running back in the sixth round and he goes down, you're like, okay, this is an inconvenience, but it's okay. You know, Sean Green is another guy I'm in love with. He's ranked at like number 50, 49 in a lot, 50 in a lot of rankings. Here's a guy that had 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns last season on a horrible Jets team. And everybody thinks he's going to just, you know, be the third down back in Tennessee. But don't forget, you know, a couple of years ago, Tennessee was talking about trading Chris Johnson. They were not happy with CJ. I think they're bringing him in to be more of a 50-50 split guy. And once again, there's another steal. If you sit back, you read between the lines and do your homework, you could walk out of a draft with 5 running backs, maybe not the prettiest running backs, maybe not the most comfortable running backs, but guys that can get the job done when you need to.
Yeah, I've got Sean Green in a couple of drafts. I got him late in. Of course, you know, Rick and I debated him mercilessly last year.
I hate Sean Green.
But I agree with you. I don't think he went to Tennessee for $3 million a year to sit on the bench, and I think he's going to get some work. Now, whether I don't know if it necessarily diminishes Johnson's stock. I think he's done that on his own. I think by all rights, I think their running game, obviously, I don't know. I think it's going to be more solid this year.
I'm not saying Chris Johnson's value will go down, but I think Sean Green's value goes up. But it's these kind of running backs you have to have an eye for. Listen, this strategy is not for the faint of heart. You know, and you have to do your homework, and you have to identify guys that can do it. You know, Michael Bush. Look how much Michael Bush did last season with what little he had. And then, you know, Matt Forte is not a healthy guy. You get, you know, you load up on all these guys. I think you could come out ahead. You know, I don't know. I know you're not happy with it, and you guys are high-fiving yourself like, we got him on the ropes.
No, we're not, because
he's actually making obscene gestures on Skype right now.
It's interesting because, no, it makes sense. These guys actually are very enticing, and they can carry your team. It's just, I don't know. I guess it's like you say. I mean, you have to actually abandon it, especially if you've had a strategy for a long time. You really have to throw something out the door to do this.
If you listen to any of that podcast last night, we went through the top 15.
No, we're going to get into that too. Yeah.
Wow, master of the segue. Chris Ivory, you know, I can name off a ton of mid-tier running backs if you load your team up. Mm-hmm. You can get these guys. I mean, Chris Ivory is set to have a big PPR a year, you know, if you believe that.
I agree. I love Chris Ivory.
He's ranked at like 22. I really think that if you get, you know, three top 10 wide receivers, and, you know, like I said, it depends on where you want to go after your quarterback. But I'm not saying either, look, if you're eyeing Julio Jones in the third round and then this running back falls to the third round, you say, screw it, I'm staying with the strategy. Everything's okay to change here. You know, you can get a player that slips. I'm okay with abandoning that strategy if a different player falls. But I really think this is kind of the way to go. You get better value early out of, you know, wide receivers than you would being held to the running back, and then you either go running back or wide receiver, play iffish there. Then I don't know. You got me. I'm not,
I think you have me convinced, Dennis, more because the bald spot on Rick's head has turned bright red right now, and anything that brings that, I'm in on the stage. The one question I have is, how high are you in the draft when you're willing to take Calvin Johnson? If you're at number one overall, are you taking Calvin Johnson? Are you sticking with Adrian Peterson? Where are you drafting that your strategy is going to kick in?
Four.
All right. Four. Okay.
Four overall. Look, if I get the first pick, how do you say no to AP? You don't.
Yeah.
The second pick, you don't. I think come four, because I think my cutoff is Jamal Charles. I think Jamal Charles, I would probably take Jamal Charles third or fourth. You know, Arian Foster, if you're an Arian Foster believer. But, you know, after the fourth pick, that's kind of when you implement that strategy.
Okay. He's trying to turn this into the Briggs Farrell debate, and he sit there and,
I'm just
and
hanging
fuel
out.
The fire here. But it's
I'm
not.
Texting. I'm having a good time here. You two can just fight it out.
But no, I mean that.
Tell Dennis why else you hate him, Rick. Go ahead.
No, that I.
Because
no,
I'm white,
this,
isn't it?
This is what makes it fun. This is the kind of stuff that makes it great.
I'm sure our guests
would
disagree.
But let's go to running backs.
It.
Let's go to running backs. Since we're just kind of talking about rankings, the cutoffs and everything, I take it you have AP as number one.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, you did hit on a very good point with your show last night with Doug Martin. Why don't you get into that a little bit? Because you're not as high as a lot of people are on him.
You know, I'm concerned. I know if you play in ESPN leagues, Doug Martin finished the year with the same amount of fantasy points as Arian Foster, and everybody's in love with him. But look at his game log for the second half of the season. After his 3 weeks of – he had 80 points in 3 weeks. Phenomenal. Can he do that again? No. That's a pace that's unheard of. Nobody has ever done anything like that, and no one will do that again. With this offense, I have a bad feeling it's going to be in shambles. You know, Freeman seems like he's getting no respect down there from the new coaching staff. I really think this is the Doug Martin trap year, you know, the sophomore slump. You know, his numbers were misleading. You look at the end result, you say 248 fantasy points, phenomenal, I'm all in. But if you really break it down, he had several amazing games, but he had just as many duds in the game logs.
He buried me in three separate leagues in the playoffs. He hit a bad stretch at the end of the year. And he's a guy who has given me a lot of heartburn, and I think we did the better part of a show on this, Rick. It's probably just because they play for the same team, but I just have that vibe, nothing to base it on. I get a Cadillac Williams vibe out of Doug Martin, and it scares me.
100% in, but there is another guy that people are having third overall in their rankings.
Yeah, ADP right now, 3.53, showing two overall on my fantasy league in terms of
that. Yeah, and that's too high. I agree 100%. That's way too high.
But the upside on the kid at the same time, you see what he was capable of in short bursts, if he could put that all together. Now you're rivaling. You're already right up there amongst being mentioned with Adrian Peterson and Arian Foster and these guys. And to look at, to your point, Dennis, as a total year, it wasn't all that great. So if a guy could put it together consistently, you could be really looking at something. But I think he's a high-risk guy.
Here's a problem. With my first five picks, I don't want to take an if guy.
Yeah, no doubt about that, because that's one that is hard to recover from.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with, to me, my sure thing this year. I mean, my number one guy, and he has been for a couple months, is Jamaal Charles. And, look, 1,509 yards last year on a abysmal team, a coaching staff that was invisible. They got Andy Reid there now. They've upgraded a quarterback. He's not afraid to throw to the running back. And I see Peterson regressing even just a little bit this year. I think Jamaal Charles, in my mind, and I'm standing by it, is the number one back right now in PPR format.
I've said Jamaal Charles is a top three back. Number one, that's he's a chief. You know, it's hard for me to say a chief is number one in anything at this point. But, you know, I predict he could have 60 catches for almost 600 yards this season, maybe five passing or receiving touchdowns.
Yeah, and if he does that and goes 1,600 yards, I mean, that translates into some very big numbers, because Ray Rice is number five in PPR last year with the 61 catches, and yet we all, you know, with our very short memories, he's not being utilized in the offense, he's not rushing enough. But, you know, he was still the number five, you know, scoring running back.
Yeah, you know, you can have Ray Rice this year. That's another guy I'm not touching. Too many question marks. Passing offense now. Bernard Pierce knocking on the back door. If Ray Rice fell to me past pick six, I would take him in a heartbeat. But he'd have to fall pretty far for me to even think about it.
Okay. So you've got AP, Charles, I'm going to say Foster, and Martin ahead of him.
Yeah.
Am I correct? Okay, who else? Do you have Lynch ahead of him with his pending trial?
I have Lynch just about even. I'm not sold on Lynch. I don't like Lynch at all this season. And
Rick just punched his computer screen.
No. Figure's the one that's getting mad here. He has no clue. You notice he's not saying anything. He's twisting his pen in his teeth over here.
Well, Phil, hang on before I say anything. I'm not even worried about this trial. It's the buildup of the team around him. They bring in Percy Harvin, who can play a little running back. I don't think that will cut or make a factor into him. But I think Marshawn Lynch's value is closely tied to Russell Martin's production. Russell Martin can run the ball. He can pass the ball. If he slumps even a little bit, I love Marshawn Lynch. But I think this is going to be an offense that's going to be centered around Russell Martin. And I really think if he's successful with his feet, if he's successful with his arm, I don't think you see Marshawn Lynch have a great year. He only had 23 receptions last season, and I don't think he cracks 25 this year.
Yeah, I think in a PPR format, he definitely suffers. What does concern me with Lynch, and this is a guy I have as a top 10 guy, he's just a stud, but he's going to need those 20 to 25 carries. So that's the question you brought up with Harvin coming into town, with Russell Wilson wanting to run the ball, being a part of that offense, the way they're going to work the offense. You wonder, are those 20 to 25 carries going to be there? Because he's not a guy who's going to put up his points through PPR. He's not a guy who's going to do it on 15 carries. He's going to grind it out 4 yards a carry. You're going to hope he finds the end zone. What I loved about him last year, I had him on so many teams. It was an automatic 110 yards and a touchdown. You could write it down. You didn't have to think about it. I love guys like that. Even with the back issue, basically stayed healthy, didn't miss any time. So I guess the concern becomes, is he going to get the requisite amount of carries he's going to need to put up his numbers, because he's not going to have the same success on 15, 18 carries a game.
Would you, and with those questions, would you be okay with taking him with your fourth pick overall?
Certainly not my fourth pick overall. He's more of a 9, 10 sort of down in that range for me.
And I don't think he falls that far. Let someone else be a sucker on that guy.
Yeah, certainly possible. Another guy, while we're just throwing names out there, a guy that gives me a ton of heartburn, because he is either I think it's one of two with this guy. He's either going to be number one overall fantasy scorer, even above Adrian Peterson in the wide receivers, or he's going to be what he's done for the last 3 years when we said this is the possibility with him, is C.J. Spiller, who we're seeing almost invariably go in the top five of these early drafts right now. Where do you land on C.J. Spiller?
I don't like him. I think C.J. Spiller has just as many questions as Marshawn Lynch. You know, new coaching staff that's not tied to Fred Jackson. You know, we all knew when Fred Jackson was healthy and playing, C.J. Spiller, for whatever reason, wasn't seeing the field and wasn't going to be the center part of this offense. Is that still the case? I don't know. It's something I have to see how it plays out in training camp. But I know as long as Fred Jackson's on that team and neither one of them has touched the field, I'm going to pass on. Now, C.J. Spiller falls to me at 10 overall. It depends on who else is around there. Maybe, but to me, C.J. Spiller has a lot of questions. And in fantasy football, I'll pass on the questions. I'll pass on the headaches. You know, there's a certain price to pay for peace of mind for your fantasy team, and I don't think C.J. Spiller can bring that to you right this second.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, talk about some question marks moving to a different position. Okay, say you're sitting at what you were at, 9 or 10, and yeah, you got Spiller or Larry Fitzgerald. Here's another guy, arguably the best receiver in the game as far as talent-wise. Carson Palmer, big enough upgrade to bolster him into your top 5 or 10?
God, that's so tough. Everybody's first instinct is no. But wasn't that everybody's first instinct when Kurt Warner got to that team and everybody's like, Kurt Warner, he was almost drummed out of the NFL when he was a Giant, couldn't hang on to the ball, he was, sacked like crazy. Could this be another situation? Is this one of those, if you don't learn from the past, then you're doomed to repeat it? That's the big question mark. To me, Larry Fitzgerald is a strong second-round guy, but I don't think that's enough of an upgrade for me to reach out and take him, because those are the same amount of questions as I have for C.J. Spiller once again. And I think there are other wide receivers that are question-free and could put up about the same amount of productions, and you don't have to put up with the headaches. Now, I could be kicking myself at the end of the year going, I should have taken him. Carson Palmer is still a guy that can throw for, 4,700 yards. I don't know. It's too early. And it's okay for people to say they don't know yet.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Larry Fitzgerald is going to be the one guy I take the risk on, maybe outside of Calvin Johnson, although I think his is more based on size, pure skill, pure wide receiver skill. You know, had the good fortune of watching Larry Fitzgerald through 3 years of college as well. Just never seen anything like it. And I think even with a barely competent NFL quarterback, Larry Fitzgerald bolts right back up into the top five of fantasy wide receivers. Again, doesn't have the size necessary that Calvin Johnson does. But this is a guy right now, he's fallen about top of the third round. If I'm sitting at the end of the second round and I'm ready to go wide receiver, if I'm playing your strategy, I think this is a guy I don't pass up on. I think this is a top three or four talent I could get for a top 12 price tag.
I don't blame you. I think it definitely puts him up into the top five wide receiver rankings. You know, over the past couple of years, he's fallen to 10th-ish and maybe even outside of it based on who his quarterbacks were. And a wide receiver is only as good as his quarterback. And I think Carson Palmer's good. I think definitely an upgrade. So, yeah, you're selling me on that.
I'm going to play a quick little game with you two. And
he sounds surly tonight.
No, I think this is good stuff because I think there's a lot of question marks out there. Now, Calvin Johnson. I mean, Calvin Johnson. I mean, we know what we got here. Okay, here's a question right here to the both of you. Dennis, you can go first. Brandon Marshall. Okay, are you still believing in the Chicago Bear offense and him and Cutler's going to do it again this year?
You know what? I'm going to say yes, and only because I think this is going to be a easier dumbed-down offense than what we've seen out of the Bears in the past. I think this is going to be a basic pitch-and-catch situation for him. You're not going to have any crazy Mike Mart stuff or anything weird like that. I think you keep it simple, and I think Brandon Marshall value is in his receptions, and I think you see another big year out of Brandon Marshall. I'm not worried about the whoever this Canadian Football League coach is, make all the jokes you want. But I think thinking outside the box sometimes pays off. And, you know, maybe the defense will hurt in the long run, but I think the offense will benefit from a simpler offense.
Yeah, here's what I like about Brandon Marshall, Rick. We saw a lot of it last year, and I don't see any reason we're not going to continue to see it. 14, 15 times a game, Jay Cutler's just going to fling it up in the air in the general direction of Brandon Marshall. 9 to 12 of those times, he's going to come down with it. That's, to Dennis's point, that's going to be the offense. Nothing crazy, no nonsense. Fling it up, let the big man, you keep slapping stuff off your microphone. That sounds good on the air. Keep, just fling it up there, let the man make plays. And after Calvin Johnson, he's probably the number two guy in terms of size and in terms of hands to just go up and get it and get it done. Has a nose for the end zone. I think Brandon Marshall, he's happy, which we know is always a huge factor. He's happy where he is. He's obviously going to be the primary focus there. Can you even name the number two wide receiver in Chicago? Well, you probably can. I can't. I think Brandon Marshall, assuming he stays healthy, which we don't have a lot of indication that he wouldn't, I think this guy is slotted right where he should be.
Yeah, I think, you know, Ashelon Jeffery, the number two guy coming back with that broken hand, I think is actually going to help out the Chicago offense. I mean, I tend to agree with you guys, but I just think there's some questions. Okay, is this the year Reggie Wayne starts to take a dip?
You know what? Normally, I would say yes, and I was on the fence last season, and I think as long as my biggest question is the change in the coaching, but I don't think take a dip. I don't think you expect anything more out of him than him being Reggie Wayne. And I mean this because he had an amazing season last season. He'll take a small dip, but I don't think it's enough to affect where he's going. I don't have the wide receiver rankings in front of me, but if he's ranked at like 14-ish, I'm comfortable with him there.
Yeah, no question about it. And looking back, Andrew Luck, fantastic season last year, only looking to get better. This was the guy he leaned on. This is the guy he's comfortable with, assuming he hasn't lost much of a step in 1 year. And I think you could tell even at times he was slower last year. But he has the good hands, a great rapport with a good young quarterback. And I think where you have Andrew Luck leaning on a guy, as long as he's physically still up to the task, I don't see anything changing.
ESPN has Reggie Wayne 16. I love him there.
Yeah, that's a beautiful spot.
You know, and another guy, you know, we won't really get into him, but another guy you can probably say about the same thing about is Steve Smith. Everybody, the doubters, both these guys are about the same age. This is the year. They're going down. They keep staying in great shape, and they keep performing. And, you know, I think Steve Smith is below Reggie Wayne somewhat. I mean, I just don't think he catches the passes. I mean, he was about 30 catches behind him last year, but he still produces. Okay, Wes Welker going to Denver. That helped Demaryius Thomas, or does that hurt him?
I think it helps him. I think it hurts Eric Decker big time. You know what? I don't think it helps Wes Welker much. I don't think Wes Welker gets 80 catches this season, but Demaryius Thomas will now see more one-on-ones, and as we can see, he is among the elite in burning corners. I love him.
Yeah, ask Ike Taylor what happens when you get caught on an island with Demaryius Thomas. I gotta wonder about not 80 catches for Wes Welker. Is it the offense? Obviously, I've seen Peyton Manning lean on guys just the same way Tom Brady does. I would think a perfect fit, you know, Peyton Manning bought Brandon Stokley's house and bought everything Brandon Stokley owns, and I think Wes Welker's a better Stokley. I'm surprised you think he'd be under 80 catches.
I just think there are too many mouths to feed. This is not the classic Indianapolis offense that we've all come to love. You know, and you've got Demaryius Thomas, who is a better quality. I guess if you break it down to, you know, put him in a pecking order, it would be Thomas, right?
Yeah, Thomas one.
You would go Welker because of name value, but we still don't know what option he would be. I would say maybe Decker because they've been together a little bit longer. There's going to be a little bit of I'm not sure there. But, I mean, at best, Welker in New England was the number one guy. He was the stud there. He was the first option. He made that whole offense click. Now he's going to a team that has he's going to be the number two guy, maybe the number three guy at times, depending on what's going on. Different offense. And, you know, Peyton Manning is Tom Brady, sure, but it's not the Peyton Manning offense that we knew in Indianapolis.
Although I wonder with all, and I know this is generic, but I wonder with all the questions at running back in Denver right now, does Wes Welker become, for lack of a better term, that running game, just that little inside slant, does that become the running game for Denver if they can't sort out the running back situation? That's where I could see him putting up the Wes Welker-like numbers.
I think maybe you're right, and it's something to keep an eye on, but if that running game does get going or is capable or manageable, I think Wes Welker is value is hurt there. And people are still going to take Wes Welker crazy early, so that's a moot point for me because I'm not touching him anywhere outside of round four.
Yeah, I agree there. You like him. You like that Denver offense, but like you said, there's a lot of miles to feed there. You know, unlike a Houston or somewhere or Detroit, there's 1 mile to feed, and that's all they worry about. I mean, there's a lot to go around. And Peyton Manning's not afraid to share either. So another question. You hit on Doug Martin and afraid of Josh Freeman. Where are you willing to go with Vincent Jackson?
Oh, man, that's a good question because I've been a Vincent Jackson guy in the past, but there are good quality wide receivers out there that I would pass up on Vincent Jackson to take him, not because I don't like him, just because I think there are going to be other guys out there that could do just as much, if not more, as him. I'm Jordy Nelson at 17. I'd take Jordy Nelson over Vincent Jackson, even though he had a bad season. Danny Amendola, if you're not scared of the injuries, and going to New England doesn't make the injuries go away. Going to New England doesn't automatically make him Wes Welker, but I think I would call them a push, and that's a guy you can get at 19.
Going back to running backs a little bit, I know you're up there in Detroit. Can you sort out this Detroit backfield for me? Is one guy going to emerge? Are we going to see it equal across all three? You bring Reggie Bush in. I read something where they may have him actually returning some punts, which makes me wonder what their plan is for him in terms of rushing the ball. Saw some good things out of LeSure, and the little bit we saw Joik Bell, I really liked what I saw out of him. Is one guy going to emerge, or are these going to be sort of flex, bye week kind of desperation guys and hoping you hit on the right one?
I think Reggie Bush is what everybody expects out of Reggie Bush, but I'm also a little concerned because there could be a backlog with guys. What happens if Javid Best comes back and can play? Now you've got Joik Bell, you've got Mikel LeSure, you've got, Reggie Bush. Now there's four running backs there.
They're not still keeping Kevin Smith around, are they?
I'm not sure. I think he's at McDonald's now.
Oh, good, good.
But, that's another question that you've got to keep an eye on. I don't, like I said before, I think in a PPR league, I would take Reggie Bush. I think Reggie Bush is good for 800 yards, but his receptions are where he comes. You know, we had a great conversation with him and said, listen, can you rush for 1,000 yards? And his answer was, they don't run the ball much here in Detroit. That when he says that, that's a red flag for me.
Yeah, considering he was saying he was going to lead the league in rushing when he was in Miami, and he turns around and says stuff like that. That's a huge red flag. And I heard Jim Schwartz saying earlier when they first signed him or whatever, he could catch 70 or 75 balls. Well, it seems to me Joik Bell was doing a pretty good job last year. And, of course, you got LeSure in there, like you said. Again, in that backfield, there's some miles to feed.
I'm concerned.
Staying with running backs, how about Frank Gore? He continues to impress. People have been writing him off for 2 or 3 years now, and the guy keeps getting it done. Do you go after him? Do you trust him? I mean, to me, I'm still leery of him, although he's proven me wrong in the past, that's for sure.
Guys like Frank Gore, I love, but it comes down to, am I willing to pay the draft price? If there's a certain point that he falls past and I'm comfortable with drafting him there, I'm 100% comfortable with getting him. But, it becomes are you okay with taking a Matt Forte who can't stay healthy come playoff time? Or, aging Frank Gore, and you saw a lot more of LaMichael James in the playoffs and Super Bowl. Those are signs and things you have to keep in mind. I think Frank Gore will be a decent 1,100-yard rusher, but I think his touchdowns fall off. He had 8 last season. I think you'll be lucky if you get 6 out of them this year.
I think it's going to depend on, and maybe that'll lead into the next question, depend on Kaepernick. Does he continue to be sort of the goal line offense where they're just going to roll him out and let him run? Are they going to give it to Gore and pound it in? I think that's going to be the question on Gore's touchdown numbers, because I think his days of busting them from 20 yards and out are going to change. So Colin Kaepernick, since we bring his name up, this is a guy I find being taken shockingly high. He had a wonderful year last year, did everything RG3 did and maybe a little bit more before RG3 got hurt. Is this a guy going to continue? I feel more of a guy who got on a heater. And look, if I'm down in late rounds and I can grab this guy, have sort of a platoon situation and see what works out. But Kaepernick is a guy that makes me nervous. I just think he's being taken way too high.
Quarterback is too deep to take a risk on somebody. Kaepernick is definitely the true boomer bust risk reward guy. He could come out and be a number one, you know, based off his rushing touchdowns quarterback, or he could be a guy that could be being replaced by week six by Colt McCoy. You don't know, where is his ADP at right now?
Oh, we'll have to flip through the pages here. Pad for me, Rick.
Okay, I mean, I'll be right up front. I'm not a real believer in Kaepernick right now. I mean, I think he's a decent quarterback, don't get me wrong. But as far as fantasy-wise, I don't have him top 10. I've got him about 15 right now. And so right now, right, to me, he's a quarterback, too. Where's he going?
All right, he's at number 52 right now, Rick. I'll give you three guesses on who number 54 is. And this will illustrate my point perfectly.
Quarterback?
Yeah, no. Overall. 52 overall ADP. Who's the 54th overall ADP who is a quarterback?
Ben Roethlisberger.
Wrong.
Okay, I give up.
Peyton Manning.
No.
That's where Colin Kaepernick's being taken, and that's what I find stunning.
Yeah. I can't get it. I mean, Peyton Manning behind Colin Kaepernick to me is ludicrous, because if there's a safe pick, you know, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees.
How about Matt Ryan at 59? This is what these are the guys Kaepernick, and I don't think you get a safer bet, Dennis, than Matt Ryan, Peyton Manning, some of these guys. And if you can get them that low, why would you ever take that risk on Colin Kaepernick?
You know, also someone probably going just as late is Tony Romo, who finished the year as a top 8 fantasy quarterback. Right there's true value, right?
No question.
I agree.
Yeah, we talk about Romo a lot. This is a guy, because of his lack of success in terms of winning ball games and lack of ability to make the one big play in the fourth quarter, who seems to get downrated from a fantasy standpoint. This guy's a top 10 fantasy guy to me. He's a 300-yard, 2 or 3 touchdown a week guy. You can live with the interceptions. I think this guy gets devalued because of his reputation and his inability to win games on the field.
100% right.
Yeah, I've got Tony Romo number 7 right now, and he could certainly move up. I like Matt Ryan. I really love Cam Newton, but I'm kind of seeing what they're planning for him. And I've got Rodgers, Breeze, Peyton, and Brady as the top 4. Until one of those guys kicks themselves out of that top 4, I'm going to have him there.
So, Dennis, where are you going to be with quarterback being as deep as it is, with seeing these guys, these Matt Ryans, Peyton Mannings available in the 5th and 6th round? Is there any situation where you're going to be compelled to? Are you going to wind up with a Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers anywhere on your squad?
The only way that happens is if Cam Newton falls to the 3rd round, which there's a 50-50 shot. People are gun-shy based off the first half of the season he had last year, but he did finish as a top 4 fantasy getter last season. I really believe in him. I believe in him to the point where I would take him at the beginning of the 3rd round. 2nd round, I like him, but based off what you can get in the 5th and 6th round, I would pass him up and take someone else in the 5th or 6th round. But I think 3rd round is amazing value for Cam Newton. Past that, I'm with you. I'm going to wait and get me the guys people don't believe in later.
Yeah, and why it's like you keep bringing up Tony Romo. Why do they equate wins with good fantasy stock? Because Tony Romo, let's face it, he may never win a Super Bowl, but so what? He may win 1,000 fantasy Super Bowls for people.
People are crazy. I mean, people are short-sighted. People have short memories, and they will pass up on a value pick for a name value. And those are guys I love playing fantasy football with.
Okay, well, let's go back. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's swing back. Swing back to your strategy. So you've taken your three wide receivers. You're combing through all these remaining running backs, these mid-tier, these lower-tier running backs. Can you name a couple of guys you think you're going to emerge? I know Rick and I did a sleeper show a few weeks back, and I tell you, Dennis, going through outside of the rookies, which are an easy guess because one or two of them are going to hit, who are some of these guys? I struggle to find some guys that are going to break out this year and maybe perform as even a number two running back that you're getting for third and fourth running back value.
Chris Ivory. I think Chris Ivory will have a good PPR season. You know what? I'm looking for Ryan Matthews. You know, right now some places have him ranked at like 25 overall running back. But you know what? That risk at 25 is definitely worth it based on what you can get. If he was 15, I wouldn't touch him. You know, you have to you know, balance where a guy falls versus where his risk reward would be. I like Breshad Mendenhall. I think that the Arizona offense is looking a little bit better. Shane Vereen, you know, here's a guy that New England's very weird with running backs. I don't think you can really say there's been a running back in New England to have two back-to-back good seasons. So I'm willing to take a flyer on Shane Vereen. I'm staying away from Vic Ballard. I think with Ahmad Bradshaw there, I'm not sold. I love Jonathan Franklin. I think Jonathan Franklin can have a big year. And, you know, I'm not huge on Isaiah Pete, but I think Zach Stacy could be pretty decent. You know, touchdown-only leagues, McKelisher, I think he is going to be the red zone guy down there. And Bernard Pierce, oddly, I think you see a lot more Bernard Pierce in to be the 42nd-ranked running back, worth a flyer.
Yeah, we've debated, Rick and I. He's really high on Lacy. I'm with you. I'm higher on Franklin. I'm not convinced, you know, maybe I really want to dive in on the Green Bay running back situation. But, you know, in late round, it could be some really good value there. But I'll tell you one team that seems to be, right now anyway, up in the air until training camp preseason goes, Cincinnati. I mean, you know, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis last year was a good meat and potatoes guy. He put up, you know, some fairly decent numbers, albeit nothing spectacular, but he was pretty solid. But, you know, now with Bernard, you know, coming there, I'm not sure which one I even want to look at.
Exactly. So many question marks. But if you have a hunch, you have a plan going in, I think there are so many good value picks at running back this year that you can – look, plain and simple, the reason why people don't wind up with two or three elite wide receivers is because they get chicken and feel like they have to draft two running backs, a wide receiver, or a running back, a wide receiver, and a quarterback. But if you go in gung-ho and know that you can steal three top six wide receivers, and it's, you know, it's very doable, I think this is a strategy that will pay off in the end.
I think we're going to have to put a league together.
Okay.
You know, I think
you should see how defiantly the look on his face is when he said that.
He is just totally wrong because this is fun stuff here.
It's like the old guy yelling people to get off their lawn.
that's precisely what it is. If you would have saw, I can't believe he let it go. But when you brought up Ryan Matthews' name, Dennis, I don't know if you understand the deep-rooted hatred Rick has for Ryan Matthews. But he rolled his eyes, he flung his head back, and then he just completely let it go. He's trying. Believe it or not, this is him being polite tonight, Dennis.
I have the same hatred for Ryan Matthews, but. If you're smart, you look at players
I'm smart.
I've been saying you're not. But
I
look at players like stocks. And if there's a guy whose stock has fallen so low that he could be a decent value pick, maybe Ryan Matthews at 25th overall, that would put him at the 6th round-ish maybe. 4th, I wouldn't take him any earlier than the 6th round. That could be a decent risk reward. If he gets hurt, you just lose a 6th-round pick. If he has a great season and performs like a top, 17 running back, then you hit the lottery. At the 6th round, that's the perfect risk reward for a guy that had so much promise but has been injury prone.
No, I agree there. I mean, it's certainly if you could get him late like that, he could certainly be a real. Boom, later on in the year, if he stays healthy, which has always been the the question mark. I tell you, a guy that could really make your team if he could fall far enough, and I don't know if he ever will, is Darren McFadden. I can't pull the trigger on this guy early enough, you know, to justify the value for him. You know, he, talent-wise, he's packed, but he just cannot deliver. And he never seems to fall, which frustrates me because I like to get him later on to have him on my team. But, you know, people, that's what really frustrates me. They will believe in a guy for years that doesn't do anything but let you down, and yet they'll abandon somebody that has a bad year in a heartbeat.
What is the drop-dead earliest you would even look at him?
We have talked about this in previous shows, and right now, you know, barring, you know, anything, right now I'm not touching him before probably late third round.
I was going to say the end of the third round, the beginning of the fourth round. If he fell there, I would probably have to kind of bite my lip a little bit and go, what are you doing? But I would have to pull the trigger there based off the potential.
Yeah, and it's fourth round for me, I guess, the tail end of the third round. There's not a lot of difference there. This is a guy, I've said it for 3 years now, if he could stay healthy, if he could get it going, this may be the best back in fantasy football. It really could be. His ability to catch the ball, his ability to run in the open field, he can hit the hole. This guy's got all the tools. You have the health risk. Last year seemed to stay healthy for a good part of the year and was just plain bad. This is going to be a guy, I think, if this is the year he finally falls, back to your point, Rick, if he finally falls, this will probably be the year he breaks out. So it's a matter of where you're willing to take the risk. And for me, I just can't see myself pulling the trigger before that, early in the fourth round.
No, I can't either. I mean, you look last year in PPR formats, he was behind Michael Turner in scoring. And Atlanta got rid of him. So, I mean, it's like he has to, he has to do something to justify anything earlier than, you know, very late third round or beginning of the fourth. I mean, it's just unheard of, but yet I don't think I'll see him.
Let's stop with just do something and start with just be healthy.
Right. I agree 100% there. And same with Ryan Matthews. I mean, that's what he's torched everybody in. Everybody thinks all the promise in the world, and he gets a hangnail and he's out for 4 weeks. And that's been his story as well. Both those guys have frustrated owners for, what, 3 years now?
Oh, at a minimum. Darren McFadden, a guy I took in the first round last year, I took in the first round 2 years ago, he's continued to burn me. So, yeah, maybe that's it. I got to put my personal feelings aside. Well, boy, Rick, that sure went quick. We are flat out of time. Dennis, we thank you so much for coming on. Why don't you take the last couple minutes here and tell everybody once again where they can find you?
Yeah, pretty simple. I'm on Twitter at Dennis77Farrell. Follow me. I'll follow you back. I'm one of those guys. I'm not egotistical where I have to have so many more followers than people I'm following. You know, I guess you can go to ESPN290.com, but I'm not sending you there. Not right now, at least. But FantasySidelineShow.com or Twitter or where else. But like I've said before, I'm the third best host right now on this podcast.
Between me and the dog, behind me and the dog, clearly, because Rick Briggs, well, you know, I'm carrying him. He's along for the ride.
Get off my lawn.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end. Dennis, thanks again so much. We really appreciate it, and let's do it again before the summer's over.
I got to get you on my podcast. Every time I try, something falls in the way. But
yeah, Rick's usually in bed when you send the message.
No. Just, you know, we just happen to be busy people. You are invisible. And this guy goes to work and he disappears. You know, and all of a sudden he'll show up on Tuesday to do the podcast, but, you know, he's invisible all week long. Nobody knows if he's alive or dead. I don't know what this guy does.
Uneasy is the head that wears the crown, Rick. That's all I can tell you. Well, that's it for this week. It's happy July 4th, everybody, as it is July 2nd. We will be back next week or in 2 weeks. I didn't get to bring up the Angelo Williams, Rick, so this song's just for you.
Oh, thank God.
So we'll be back. Check us out on Twitter, at Asylum Football, asylumfootball@gmail.com. And thank you again to our friends at 88.1 FM, WSRU, the voice of the rock, who continue to put up with this nonsense from us, Rick.
And Dennis, thank you again for coming into the asylum. And hang on if you got a couple minutes.
I'm here.
He's not done yelling at you. We got to at least let it get through the hook, Rick. Sing it with me. Come on.
It's disgusting.
Come on. Put your headphones back on. Getting back together. 15 seconds. You can do it.
No.
What?
Like, ever.